Elizabeth Burke Bryant, good morning.
Good morning, Elizabeth.
So among the trends you point out this year, Rhode Island's child population is down 14% since 2000, and the state has quite a low birth rate. Is this the decrease that demographers had expected?
It is partially. We had seen these trends coming. They have been picking up steam in the last several years. I think it also hit head on with a very much of a lingering recession in Rhode Island, where we had a lot of unemployment and a lot of loss of jobs. So that when you're thinking about new families coming and living in Rhode Island, that also contributes to a lack of population overall and the birth rate of babies.
What are the impacts on a state of a shrinking number of children?
The good news in that economic picture is we're starting to see signs of real hope. Our unemployment rate, for example, has significantly decreased to now it's around 5.4% after being one of the highest in the country. So that's a really important sort of new bolster in terms of hoping to attract people here to raise their families here. But overall, I think that population trends are really concerning if you're thinking about wanting to have a robust economy and a prepared workforce and the kind of economic activity that requires both of those things.
One interesting thing I noticed is that Rhode Island's youngest residents are a little bit more than 40% children of color, and that's a big increase from earlier generations. Also, most of them live in cities. Are there two Rhode Islands, one urban and increasingly diverse, and the other suburban and overwhelmingly white?
Well, I want to speak to the two Rhode Islands question, but first I want to just react that the diversity of Rhode Island's children really mirrors the diversity of the United States children. It is a growing national trend, and it is obvious here in Rhode Island as well. Something like 90% of our senior citizens are white. However, only about 57% of our children are white. Added diversity is something that's really a strength for our community. What we have to watch out for is increasing percentages of children living in poverty in concentrated areas of our core cities, including the lion's share of our children of color. So right now, about two-thirds of Rhode Island's poor children are living in the four core cities of Providence, Pawtucket, Central Falls, and Woonsocket, and a significant percentage of Rhode Island's children of color, about 80%, are living in those four communities.
Now, some good news on the economy. You found a drop in unemployment among parents. Does that mean we're seeing decreases in the percentage of children living in low-income families in Rhode Island?
Well, I think there might be a delayed effect there. We are celebrating the good news that more people are working in Rhode Island, and that is great news for kids. The indicator of children in poverty is a reflection of family income. So that as more Rhode Islanders that were previously unemployed are getting back to work, that is going to have a positive effect eventually on children in poverty. But right now we're seeing a very flat number, an unchanging number of children in poverty. Around 20% or one in five children is still living in poverty in Rhode Island. That represents about 41,000 of our children living in families with an income of around $19,000 for a family of three. That is far too many. So to answer your question, I think that there is a delayed effect in terms of people getting jobs, bringing income into those households, and having that overall household income go up. A few of the barriers with respect to children in poverty is the education level of parents and their readiness for jobs that really do require a level of education many of them don't have yet that are what's needed to get those higher paying jobs.
Let's talk for a moment about Rhode Island's Family Leave Act. This allows residents to take some paid leave from their jobs so they can care for a new baby or a family member who's sick. You wouldn't get your full salary, but it's at least something. And I was really interested to see that about a third of applications for time off to care for a new baby came from men.
Yes, I think that's a really positive sign. It's great, first of all, that Rhode Island is one of three states to have passed this temporary caregivers law. It's absolutely something that jumped out at us, too, that during the debate on the bill, people were more and more talking about our responsibility as family members, regardless of our gender. And that is true with the caring of young children. And so it's great to see so many fathers taking advantage of that and so many employers working with both moms and dads to try to extend that critical coverage of parents with their newborns.
Now, Elizabeth Burke Bryant, on a more sobering note, opioid abuse has, of course, been a big problem in Rhode Island and across the country. And your report shows that more babies are being born in withdrawal from opioids.
We are reporting now, based on the latest data, that in 2014 in Rhode Island, 97 babies were diagnosed with what's called neonatal abstinence syndrome, NAS. But last year at this time, we were saying 76 babies in 2013. And so that was a jump even from the 2013 data of 76 babies up to 97 babies. There are things that are being done to try to intervene.
And interestingly, while poverty may be a greater problem in our core cities, this problem doesn't seem to fall along those lines.
You're absolutely right. 88% of babies that were born with opioids in their system were born to white mothers.
But also a lot of them are in suburban areas.
Yes, it's a statewide issue, and it's requiring a statewide response.
Another trend your report points out is an increase in children landing in the hospital because of mental health problems. Why has that number been going up?
Well, first of all, I think there's much more awareness that mental health issues can strike at the youngest ages. It used to be seen as an oxymoron that you could say something about infant mental health, for example. But we know that there are certain situations of long-term stress, sometimes called toxic stress, where there are a number of stressors, whether it's an unsafe housing situation, not enough food, child abuse and neglect, things that cause tremendous stress in children and young people's lives that can add up to a situation where there are mental health issues that need treatment. There are lots of other mental health diagnoses that that aren't a result of any of those stressors, but that are just present in children. So I think the growing awareness about mental health, the greater acceptance that mental health treatment can work, has led to increased referrals for mental health issues. Why are we seeing more referrals to hospitals? It's actually a trend we don't want to see. What we'd like to see is more community-based treatment that is more family-centered at the earlier stages of a mental health issue. An increase in hospitalizations means that we're not getting it early enough for some of these children that really could benefit from earlier intervention that could prevent things from escalating.
Elizabeth Burke Bryant is the executive director of Rhode Island Kids Count, and she spoke with me about the release of this year's Kids Count Factbook. Thank you so much.
Thank you.